It's not that God does not have a plan. It's not that God does not have a purpose. It's not that God doesn't want to be good to us.
Dr. Tony Evans says we can count on the Lord's blessings, but not necessarily on our schedule.
Because we're insisting on our time, we mess up the enjoyment of His goodness.
This is The Alternative with Dr. Tony Evans, author, speaker, senior pastor of Oak Cliff Bible Fellowship in Dallas, Texas, and president of The Urban Alternative. Today, Dr. Evans will talk about what we can do when our financial problems aren't just about our bank balance, but when we're actually caught in a money curse. Let's turn to 2 Kings chapter 5 as he explains.
We're talking about the comeback, reversing the curses in your life. Many people feel like they've been cursed, that nothing seems to work out, that things keep getting worse and worse and worse rather than better and better and better. And even when things look like they're getting better, you just watch your clock and wait, because the feeling is inevitable that something's getting ready to go wrong, because can't this much be this good for that long? And everyone likes a comeback. Everybody likes to see somebody who appears to be on the losing end of something and things get reversed and they make their way back. Since you're still here, then we're going to operate throughout this series with a fundamental assumption, and that is God's not finished yet. You're still here. If you're a Christian and He were finished with you, you wouldn't be here. He would have taken you home and it would be over. But you're still here, so there must be something up. But you may be wondering, how is that possible when everything looks bleak for an extended period of time? Last time we looked at a man named what? Naaman. He's a man that had a curse on him. And through a supernatural act of God, the curse was lifted when he humbled himself and completed his obedience. God took away in a moment what he had struggled with for an extended period of time. It was a supernatural reversal. The story of Naaman really introduces us to another story. Naaman looks like the end of a story, but really it's the introduction to a saga. We ended the sermon last week with me being very upset that the prophet would not take the $1.2 million offered by Naaman to Elijah for his transformation. But the story continues. This is the same story, because verse 20 says, but Gehazi, that is Elijah's servant, thought. Now remember what Naaman thought, and he ran into a problem. Well, now Gehazi thought. He said, now my master didn't save this man's life. In verse 20, he saved his life, but not taking the money. He said, I don't understand that. Something wrong with my master. There's a problem here. He crazy. He says at the end of verse 20, as the Lord lives, I will run after him, Naaman, and take something from him. He ain't getting away with that much blessing for nothing. God been too good to him not to leave him something behind, and if Elijah won't take it, I will. Show me the money. I want to show you something that if you read it too fast, you'll miss it. In fact, there are a couple of these as we go along. The end of verse 20, he says, I will run after him and take something from him. Watch this, as the Lord lives. Okay? As the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him. Now, I want you to compare that with what Elisha said in verse 16. But he said, as the Lord lives before whom I stand, I will take nothing. Elijah said, as the Lord lives, before whom I stand, I will take nothing. Gehazi says, as the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him. The difference between the two comments is that Elisha said, before whom I stand. See, both use the name of God, as the Lord lives. But Elijah makes before whom I stand. In other words, Elijah said, before whom I'm accountable. In other words, Elijah had a sense of divine accountability. Gehazi was just using God's name. See, a lot of folk use God's name who don't have divine accountability. But they sound spiritual. Let me go get something in the name of the Lord. Yeah, because I think God wants me to have this. And so he thinks using God's name equals getting God's permission. He didn't have a sense of divine accountability. And so he runs up behind Naaman. He pursued Naaman. Naaman comes down off of his chariot. And then in verse 22, he constructs a lie. Now, here's the secret. Whenever you have to deceive to get God's blessing, whenever you have to be deceptive in order to get God to be good to you, that is your cue, something's wrong. If you can't be on the up and up and be blessed, then what you're getting is not a blessing, even though you may get the stuff you're after. He's after some money, honey. He's after some stuff. But he has to concoct a story in order to legitimize the stuff he wants. He concocts a story, and in order to take the pressure off of him, he concocts a story using his master's name. He says in verse 22, my master sent me. Well, that's a lie. Master said, we're not taking anything. But Naaman doesn't know. So he says, my master sent me. And we got two seminary students. Two young men, sons of the prophets. Okay? Who have come from the hill country. And, you know, they don't have enough to get through school. They don't have enough to make it. And we want to help a brother out. So my master sent me to get a little something, something from you in order to help out these two guys. So he now has to create a story. Anybody in here ever created a story to get what you wanted from somebody? You crafted a story that was not real. But you still had God's name all up in it, as the Lord lives. Because he still got God's name up in it. But he has to craft a deceptive situation. Well, Naaman doesn't know, so Naaman gives him. See, he couldn't see that much money walking away. It was too much money, 1.2 million. He said, I got to get me something of that. So he crafts a story in order to get a quick financial fix. And he collects some of the goods that Naaman was going to give away and makes his way back. Now, Naaman sends some of his servants back with him in order to take some of the money and the clothes that Gehazi said that he needed. He comes to the hill country. When he comes to the hill, which is the elevated portion, he knows he can't have the servants come with him, because he can't be observed. And so he takes it from their hand and goes into his house, verse 24, and stashes it. Then he goes in and he stands before Elijah, his employer, his master. And Elijah says, where have you been, Gehazi? And he says, oh, I ain't been nowhere. I've been here. I ain't gone nowhere. Then he said to him, did not my heart go with you? In other words, I could feel you. When that man came up with that 1.2 million, I saw your heart popping out your chest. Boom, 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 boom. I could feel you. Now watch this, because this is the deep point he's going to make. When the man turned from his chariot to meet you, I knew something was off. My heart went with you, because you've been working for me for a long time. I know you, boy. Look at this phrase. Is it time to receive money, to receive clothes, to receive olive goods, to receive vineyards, to receive sheep, to receive oxen, to receive male and female servants? I got to read that again because that's a deep point. He says, is it time to receive money, clothes, olive groves, vineyards, sheep, oxen, male and female servants? Now, something ought to be hitting you right now. Something shouldn't sound right to you. You see, when he went to Naaman, all he got was money and clothes. That's all he asked for. When he comes back to Elisha, Elisha says, is it time to get money, clothes, oxen, sheep, vineyards, male servants, female servants? In other words, Elisha's bringing up stuff that Gehazi never asked for. He's bringing up a whole bunch of stuff. The key phrase here, is it time? Is it time? It wasn't simply what Gehazi wanted. It was timing. In other words, you want stuff before the time. And the reason we know it's not yet time is that you got to deceive to get it. You've got to get it illegitimately in order to have it. It's not, watch this now, it's not that God doesn't want you to have these things. He doesn't want you to have them now. It's a timing issue.
Dr. Evans will talk about the consequences of tampering with God's timing when he continues this lesson from his series, The Comeback. This collection explores ways to reverse the consequences of spiritual failures in your past, find deliverance, and develop the wisdom you need to get your life headed in a new and healthy direction. As a way of investing in you and your family, we'd like you to have this entire 10 CD collection, along with a special bonus, a 52-week devotional from Tony and his son Jonathan called the Kingdom Family Devotional. Topics range from basics of the faith like salvation, prayer, and discipleship to life essentials like handling money, picking friends, and setting priorities. It's meaty enough for mom and dad and simple enough to keep the kids on board. Both of these powerful resources are yours as our thank you gift when you come alongside Tony's ministry with a contribution of any size. We're a completely listener-supported ministry, so your faithfulness is the only way we can keep bringing you this broadcast each day. Again, you can make all the arrangements at TonyEvans.org or give us a phone call at 1-800-800-3222. That's 1-800-800-3222. Dr. Evans will come back with more of today's lesson right after this.
Sometimes you feel like life is pummeling you from every angle. Can't see where the next punch is coming from, but sure enough, it comes. But there are lessons to be learned in these moments. Not every knockdown is a knockout. In his new book, Your Comeback, Tony Evans provides the inspiration you need to have your ultimate personal and spiritual comeback. Begin the journey to your comeback today. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Elisha knew Gehazi so well that he says, you've just begun this journey downhill. You started with clothes and money, but this thing is bigger than that because you want houses and vineyards and sheep and oxen and male and female servants. In other words, you have begun a slippery slope that's going to take you downhill. Have you ever seen somebody going wrong and you know they've only just begun? In other words, they're doing a little something here, but you see them in prison 5 years from now because you see that thing spinning out of control. The issue was time. And I must pause here because a lot of us miss our blessing because we mess with the wrong time. It's not that God does not have a plan. It's not that God does not have a purpose. It's not that God doesn't want to be good to us. But because we mess with his timing, we mess up the enjoyment of his goodness. Because we're insisting on our time. What I want, this is when I want it. I don't care how God feels about it. And so I'm going to connive to get it. And we create our own timing. We have interfered with God's purpose. Now, I'll explain in a moment the relationship of timing. Therefore, verse 27, the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and your descendants forever. So he went out of his presence a leper as white as snow. Here we have a quick sentence. Passed immediately on the servant because of the servant's action. His sons are cursed and their sons are cursed. His family line, his seed through the males is cursed forever. Now, the implications of that one statement is nothing short of staggering. The man makes one bad decision and life is over as he knows it. I wonder if there's anybody here who's made a bad decision and you're still dealing with it. Maybe it was a bad financial decision and you've been paying for it for 20 years and you still can't get out of that hole. Maybe it was a relational decision that you made and you still can't get out of that hole. Maybe it was a personal decision that you made that was a mistake. And every day of your life, you're reminded, I made that mistake. And it's like a curse. Let's talk about this curse a little bit. Elijah says, the leprosy that was on Naaman is now yours. You now contract his illness. And he becomes white as snow. Now, lest you think this is a small thing, let me read you something. You don't have to turn there, but I want to read Leviticus chapter 13, which gives us God's guidelines for the leper in Israel. And of course, they are in Israel. And this is what God says. He speaks about it the whole chapter, but specifically, I want to raise the issue of the sentence that's passed upon the leper when he has contracted the disease. There are a number of passages here that talk about leprosy and its implications. And we don't have time to go over them all, but I do want to cite just a couple of verses that helps us understand in verse 45 and 46. As for the leper who has the infection, his clothes shall be torn, the hair of his head shall be uncovered. He shall cover his mustache and cry, unclean, unclean. He shall remain unclean all the days during which he has the infection. He is unclean. He shall live alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. So when you contracted leprosy, which was an infectious disease, it not only affected you physically, it affected you socially, because now you couldn't live with your family. You couldn't live with your friends. You were cast outside the camp. You were in a living hell. In fact, the word hell in the Bible is from the word Gehenna. And the word Gehenna was a garbage dump outside the camp. It was where you threw garbage. It was a big trash area that the city would take outside the camp, and it would regularly be where lepers would live, because then they could eat food from the scraps that were being thrown away. It was a horrible life. The man is in an irreversible situation. So I'm talking to anybody who is in, or anybody who knows somebody who is in, what appears to be an irreversible situation, because it's forever. You don't know when this thing going to turn around, because it hadn't turned around and it doesn't look like it's going to turn around, and it looks like God has stamped on your forehead, bam, forever. Forever you're going to be in debt. Forever you're going to be a failure. Forever. And you can see it worked out as your children. Forever you're going to be an alcoholic, and now your children have picked up alcoholism. Forever you're going to be a wife beater, and now your son is beating his wife. And forever you're going to do it. Forever, forever, forever. and that thing is passed down in your family, and you just like your mama, you just like your daddy, and this thing is spinning and spinning, and you can see it worked out as a generational curse. And you seem to be in this cycle and can't get out. You can't cover it up. You can't camouflage it. It is an embarrassing situation and a painful situation and a lonely situation and a financially destitute situation since you can't work anywhere. He is suffering the consequences of his actions. And what's messing with me about this whole thing is that word forever. Because see, if you got a date when something's going to end, then you can look forward to it. But when there is no date and it's forever, that's a bad situation. He wants money so bad, and many of us know people who, for the love of money, make decisions that are costly. Now, turn your Bible to 2 Kings chapter 8. Now the king, verse 4, was talking to Gehazi, the servant of the man of God, saying, please relate to me all the great things that Elisha has done. And he was relating to the king how he had restored to life the one who was dead. Behold, the woman whose son he had restored to life appealed to the king for her house and for her field. And Gehazi said, my lord, O king, this is the woman, and there is her son whom Elijah restored. When the king asked the woman, she related to him. So the king appointed for her a certain officer, saying, restore all that was hers and all the product of the field from the day she left the land even until now. What? Wait a minute now, we just saw in chapter 5, the man's a leper. The man is in isolation, but we come to chapter 8, and we're told two things about him. Number one, he's still called the servant of Elisha. Number two, he hobnobbing with the king. Something has occurred and been brought to finality over these 7 years that's got Gehazi back up as servant of Elisha and in front of the king's presence at the very same time that this woman whose son was raised from the dead shows back up to ask for her land back in the king's court. What happened to Gehazi was a flaw in his character that needed to get fixed. As long as it was unfixed, it was irreversible. In other words, irreversible does not mean absolutely irreversible. Irreversible means irreversible until there's a change in you.
Dr. Tony Evans, talking about what it means to be caught in a money curse. And tomorrow, he'll continue this message with advice on how to recover from some of those costly decisions. Right now, though, I want to remind you about the book I mentioned earlier in the program today, The Kingdom Family Devotional. It's packed with 52 weeks of inspiration for you and your family, and it's yours as our gift when you help us out with any contribution, large or small, to help us keep Tony's teaching on this station. Along with it, you'll get all 10 CDs in Tony's current series, The Comeback. But this special double offer won't last long, so visit TonyEvans.org to make the arrangements before time runs out. That's TonyEvans.org. Or reach out to our Resource Center at 1-800-800-3222. It's open 24/7. That's 1-800-800-3222. Tomorrow, more from Dr. Evans on reversing the money curse, including specifics on how God can reverse even irreversible consequences. Be sure to join us. The Alternative with Dr. Tony Evans is brought to you by The Urban Alternative and is made possible by the generous contributions of listeners like you.